Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Earth on Survival Guide, the podcast for all disciplines, paths, players, and game masters. With your questers, Josh and Dan, I am Dan.
I am Josh.
And on today's podcast, we will be discussing all things avaricical, because we're going to get to the parlance adventure called Desire Box. So instead of calling everything boxical, I decided to go highfalutin on you there. So if you have any questions for us about anything we've ever talked about the previous 210 episodes, or you have a brand new question for Josh to answer, please drop us a line at edsgpodcast@gmail.com. Josh, initial thoughts on the Desire Box adventure? I've run this one, but it's been a while.
I don't remember whether I have run this one or not. I think I have, and I wasn't super happy with it for reasons that I will get into, and it has nothing to do with the adventure itself. I think the adventure is a hoot. Of the par-length adventures, it is probably like the most lighthearted of them.
Mm-hmm.
The most potentially farcical,
yes,
for lack of a better term. I talked about, when we talked about Dead Man's Hand.
Yeah.
How that one is darkly whimsical in a
Tim Burton-esque.
Tim Burton slash mid-80s Jim Henson non-Muppet creation stuff.
Yeah, Dark Crystal.
Like Dark Crystal or Labyrinth.
Labyrinth. Yeah, stuff like that.
It's got that kind of vibe where it is offbeat and weird and dealing with some creepy stuff, but in a way that's kind of like amusing and not horrible the way that Blood Pact was, where you're dealing, yep, with like people that are literally like broken by the horrors and the pain and suffering that the horrors can cause. Desire Box is even more lighthearted and whimsical and entertaining in terms of its basic plot, in terms of what's, yeah, going on with it. It is the most lighthearted and potentially the funniest of the par-length adventures. Now, admittedly, you don't come to Earthdawn adventures generally for their humor.
No.
But I love me some good contrasts.
Juxtaposition.
Yeah, juxtapositions. Having amusing or funny or whimsical stuff in amidst darker or like more traditional high magic epic fantasy kind of feel, I think is wonderful. And Morgan agreed. If you look at the write-up for the Direwolf in, I think it's, mm-hmm, in the Companion, it is absolutely like one of those weird whimsical little things that,
yeah,
tickle me greatly.
Fair. No, because
I will get to what I had problems with later, but that's kind of my initial.
That's absolutely fine, because I think for something this, as you said, lighthearted or taking the expectation and kind of turning it on its ear a little bit, Parlanth is not, or in Haven, is not where you'd expect this one to take place. But this is where this one takes place.
Well, fortunately,
yeah,
this is, I think, of the four adventures, this is the one that could most easily be picked up and dropped anywhere else.
Agreed.
Because the MacGuffin, the plot, the story of this is not tied into Haven really in any significant way. The general outline of what's going on could happen in any community. It's just, yes, this one is written up as taking place in Haven and therefore is playing on the personalities and characters of that community to have things happen.
Yeah. So this is, go ahead.
This feels like one of those like sort of comedic filler episodes that you would get in a show like, say, Supernatural or something like that, where like
Buffy
things tend to be
Slayer,
darker and whatnot.
Yeah.
And this is like a almost, I don't want to say bottle episode exactly, but like that kind of like self-contained, mm-hmm, its own thing that doesn't really have a huge amount of bearing on anything else that's going on around it. It's just kind of a, no, thing that happens and then it's done and you kind of move on from there.
Yes. So to not give out the entire plot and go detail by detail, because that's not what this podcast is for, this feels like a very slow unfolding mystery that just ends up in a frenzy of what is going on at the end. And so it's a very slow build, but once it builds, there's this frenetic energy that needs to be resolved. And then, as you said, you kind of walk away from it after that and go, well, that happened. Let's get back to our lives now.
Yeah.
So it's a self-encapsulated little tiny thing.
The basic premise of the adventure is that Archiana Smoothskin, the leader of the Association of Unaffiliated Explorers.
Yes.
And the sort of chief rival to Torgak in terms of the leadership of Haven as a community.
Yeah.
Is really pushing in this adventure to undermine Torgak and has become convinced that she has recovered something from the ruins that yes. will allow her to accomplish her goal. And is like building up this big meeting where she's going to reveal what's going on to everybody and
her grand plan and her massive
the grand plan and all of this stuff.
Yeah.
The characters get a little roped into it when somebody approaches them to help provide protection for Archiana during the event.
Totally.
And so it starts off seemingly like kind of political intrigue.
Mm-hmm.
And like we're getting involved. But then it turns out that what's driving all of this is this
treasure,
passions infused artifact mm-hmm. called the Desire Box. And all yes. it is it's a box that can't be opened. But whoever holds it is convinced that it has exactly what they need in order to achieve their goals.
Yeah.
And it inspires the people around them to believe that as well. And so then to follow them, but also at the same time inspires avarice and greed that they want it for themselves so that they can do what they're seeking out to do. It is basically, it's a thing from Corollis.
Yes.
So what ends up happening, and this is where the problem that I had when I ran the adventure comes up.
Mm-hmm.
You have the buildup, you have the event with Archiana, and then somebody else gets hold of the box, yeah. and things start to go weird.
Yep.
The difficulty is that I think the end of this adventure probably works best if you did more preparation than I did in terms of running it.
Fair. Okay.
The adventure kind of only presents a like it's got Archiana, it's got the other person that gets the box.
Mm-hmm.
But then it says, and now is your farce ending of things where various people get a hold of it at different times and
chaos ensues.
Chaos ensues. Like, again, like a classic farce. Think of like the ends. I'm going to throw out some references. If they don't mean anything to you, that's fine. Thinking of like the end of Noises Off or A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum or.
Yeah.
Like the end of a Scooby-Doo episode where the gang is running back and forth between the doors and like the farce kind of like chase scene weirdness that goes on.
Where they just keep trading doors back and forth, you know, the Looney Tunes cartoons.
The idea is like the crowd and the people and whatnot end up kind of like washing back and forth, mm-hmm. following different people that get a hold of the box as it changes hands, and possibly even at some point the player characters getting a hold of the box and what they then do with it.
Yeah.
And I think there are a couple of things that made this not work particularly well for me. And it's similar in a little ways to the setup for Dead Man's Hand, where you mm-hmm. want to have the NPC that is being taken by the cadaver men to be someone that the group has a pre-existing relationship with so that they have a reason
to
get involved rather than to go, well, unfortunately for him, he shouldn't have placed a bet that he wasn't
Sucks
able
for
to
that
back
guy.
Up. And so there are the kind of two things I think that are important for a successful run of this adventure, at least the way that I see it, are one, have the characters have been around enough to have established relationships or to know of the various people that are involved.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is not going to necessarily hit the same if they're new in town and don't really know any of the people involved.
They
got
to be familiar with all the NPCs that are going to be involved. At least a couple of the NPCs that are going to be involved here.
Yeah.
Not
but
all.
Also, I think to sort of heighten the effect of things during the climax of the adventure.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something that, again, maybe requires some seeding in earlier adventures, is to, one, have additional NPCs beyond the ones that are given the focus here.
Yeah.
But also to have those established relationships and maybe to have what they are after in order to provide some clues as to what is going on with the box as it's changing hands, and to have a little bit more planning and a little bit more forethought in terms of what's going on during that resolution, because there's not a lot of advice given in the latter part of this.
Yeah.
It basically says, now is your chance to go wild, and maybe the player characters get a hold of it. It gets into another person's hands, and they decide. There's not a lot of guidance.
Help. Yeah.
Again, let's compare this to Dead Man's Hand.
Mm-hmm.
And to a certain extent, Infected, both of which were by Robin Laws, and provide guidance on, there are a number of ways that this could be resolved, and here are the ways that you might address each of those potential solutions.
Yeah.
While you won't use everything in there, it does provide you with a good overview of what's going on and how the various approaches might resolve. You don't have that here. It's more like you've got a lot of good information kind of in the setup and the main spine of the story.
Yeah.
And I think part of this is because of the length that it is, because it has to be kind of short. There is not the space to flesh out other characters and provide those additional points of view or folks that could be sucked into whatever is going on.
Yeah.
That's what is missing. And the thing that I think a game master who is planning to run this would need to think about and prepare for ahead of time. Now, it might be that if I were to run this now, as opposed to 25 years ago or whenever I last ran it, because I think I might have run this with my long-term Earthdawn group, the same one that had Hatch that did Dead Man's Hand. I think I did this one as well, because I like the story. I like the premise. I like it so much.
Yeah.
But I just was not, there was not enough groundwork laid, and I wasn't comfortable enough that I feel like I kind of rushed the ending and it wasn't particularly satisfying.
Fair.
And I would probably have a little bit more prep time, but I'm also a lot more comfortable with improv and making stuff up now than I was 25 years ago. So that might be something as well. But even just some thought ahead of time of who are the NPCs that the group knows? What are things that they could want? What would be funniest?
Mm-hmm.
Either in a incongruous fashion. If you've seen Tangled, the Disney movie.
Yes.
When Rapunzel goes into the tavern with all of the cutthroats and mercenaries and whatnot, and they're all these, and they have that wonderful musical number.
Yes.
About their own dreams and these lovely things that, like, one wants to be a chef and one's a mime and one collects little ceramic unicorns. And like, it's completely, it's great. And it's funny because of the incongruity of that.
Totally.
Yeah. You could have some opportunities where you've got an NPC who gets a hold of the box, and it turns out that what they want is something that is completely surprising in terms of what you would expect for their character or their presentation. But then also have NPCs that have established things that they want, and they get the box and kind of are able to pursue that. Just more opportunities, different characters to get a hold of this and present situations to start providing clues as to what is going on. I think that is the biggest weakness of this adventure, is the amount of space that is not provided. And again, I think it's because of space reasons for the support in the latter part of that adventure, where at least as a less experienced GM 25 years ago, I really felt the lack of it.
Fair. Because I ran this about 15 years ago, I want to say. I didn't check my notes on this one. But I agree. It was, I ran this one, I want to say, either third or fourth in out of the four of these adventures. I ran them all four, one after the other, but I ran this one, I want to say, later in. I didn't start with this one because I wanted them to get, to your point, they had to know Parlaith, they had to know Haven a little bit. They had to interact with Torgak a little bit, of course, because that's kind of hinging on the whole thing. You need to know who that Torgak is, the mayor, and he's running things in the town, and his group cleared it out and founded the town, and you know, he's kind of important. But when I did this, I did do some more prep, to your point, And I had asked my player characters a while ago, my players, I said, what do your characters really, really want out of your adventuring thing? Because I've always said, make a character you want to write a novel about. One. Two, what do they want to achieve? Three, are there any special items they want to get along their way? You know, do they want a special weapon or a special magical item or whatever the case may be? So I always preface those questions ahead of time. So I had some of those locked and loaded for what they were going to do. And this whole thing requires that they know Haven, but they're absent from it for a little bit and then come back so that they can walk into a fresh scenario, because this whole thing starts with a mob outside of Torgax wanting to do some damage to it or him, you know, take him out, throw him in jail, lynch him, whatever they're going to do. And so this is a slightly linear, choose your own adventure. To your point, like Dead Man's Hand, like Infected, those are very choose your own adventure. You can choose option A, B, or C, and the answers to those were provided for you. To your point, this one a little bit less so. So this requires more prep work and also, to your point, better improvisational skills, because the game master is going to have to really go on the fly for like the third act of this whole thing.
I agree with you, but I don't think that's necessarily the case.
Fair.
I don't think that the improv is necessary beyond what your normal sort of GMing improv might be.
Fair.
If you have done the prep work and you know, here are the NPCs that I have to work with, here's what they want.
Yeah.
At least getting that kind of info to draw from.
Mm-hmm.
And even if you want to get like scripted out even more to like, go, okay, it'll be this person, then this person, then this person, or whether you just make the list and their desires and go from there. I think that is prep work that you can do ahead of time and think about the different situations and how they would handle the events and how they would handle getting a hold of the box.
Yeah.
When it happens. And you can think about that and prepare for that ahead of time, which I didn't do. This is part of the reason why I think this adventure would be even more interesting and perhaps to a certain extent easier to run in the Legends of Barsave time period, because that campaign, those adventures introduce so many more NPCs that the group establishes relationships with, that it gives you a lot more sort of ready to go ideas as to what's going on.
Yeah.
What they might want and how they might react. Whereas in this, you've basically got Archeana, you've got
Torgak,
although I don't know that Torgak ever gets a hold of the box.
No, he doesn't get a hold of the box, but you have to go Archeana, talk to Torgak at some point.
The other person that like gets the box away from Archeana kind of kicks off the farcical climax of it.
Yeah.
I feel like two or three other NPCs whose hands it goes through in order to like really kind of drive things. And then ultimately, of course, the final resolution.
Yes.
It was Corollus's box, which is part of the reason why it's got these powers and whatnot.
Yeah.
And the excitement and greed and avarice and desire that fervor is like being grown and expanded upon draws his attention. And he shows up and goes, oh, that's where I put it, and takes the box and goes away. And everybody's kind of left going, oh.
So that happened.
Yeah. And kind of like looking at each other a little furtively and then just like turning and like, we're going to try and pretend that like none of this happened. I think that like final resolution is fantastic. I think there is an opportunity, perhaps, if you've got players that are a little bit more savvy and you are providing in that sort of act three bit more hands that it's passing through with more clearly defined objectives and goals, that they could put together the fact that the box doesn't actually, like, the ideal thing, if I were doing it as a story, would be to have it get to the point where they start to put the pieces together and figuring out that maybe the box doesn't actually contain what the person thinks it has.
Yes.
The box just makes them think it has it.
Mm-hmm.
there's a weird magic involved that's causing everybody to kind of go along with it. And just as they're having that realization, have the box fall into their hands so that they get swept up in it as well. And kind of have that be the conclusion, or alternately figure out that maybe it is connected to Corollis somehow and actually doing something deliberate to draw the attention of the passion to maybe do something about it.
Yeah. No, fair. I kind of put this as a choose your own adventure because it's here's where the improv skills are going to have to come in a little bit, I think. And it's the game master's ability to keep to either hook somebody, keep them hooked, or lure them back in. Because when you first find the mob outside, you can either help break up the mob, you can help the mob throw Torgak in jail, you can talk to Torgak, or you can do nothing, obviously. And doing nothing is the worst part because you're supposed to rope somebody in, which is why they use the NPC of Torgak. You should have a relationship with that person and have worked with them or for them before. And so you kind of have a need to maintain the status quo of what Torgak is doing when you attend Archeana's meeting, because this is the next act, and you can either, you're asked to follow her and protect her, and they're paying you a lot of money to do so. Well, they promise you a lot of money. They're not going to actually pay you a lot of money, but you can either attack Archeana, or you can agree to follow her and protect her, or again, you can do nothing. So the whole, if you're going to choose to do nothing, this is where the game master has to seriously figure out how to rope you back into this one. Otherwise, you have no plot. Or you can confront her before she speaks. So again, you've got like three or four options every single time, and always doing nothing is a possibility, because how much do you actually care? So you can't start off in Haven running this one, to Josh's point. This would be great if it were reprinted and tweaked a little bit here and there and fleshed out just a little bit more, to Josh's point, in the new Adventures of Haven Series 2. It would also be great as well. But then when the box does change hands, to Josh's point, have some more things fleshed out than was already laid out in here. Again, due to space considerations, have a few more options. When I ran this, my player characters did get their hands on it at the end. I made sure at least two people in the group out of the four I was running touched it. And I think a third one tried to, but a brawl happened at this point because it was one of those, everybody got grr and just started like, fisticuffs and drawing weapons and so forth and protecting the box because they had to have it. But I also made them tell me, the game master, what their actual desire was. And if it was bigger than the box, that's when they figured out that the box doesn't actually contain what they have. But a part of it was in there or something along those lines. And so the reasoning did play in because if they wanted something that was bigger than what the box could contain, that helped figure everybody else out, but they still wanted it. Because what they wanted was probably something that fit in there as well. So it's a delicate balance that the game master has to pull off with everybody, all the NPCs, and maintaining the fact that they want to be around this plot. So slightly linear, choose your own adventure.
Yeah. Again, I don't want my issues with this to reflect badly on the adventure.
No, Alan Varney put together a fantastic...
Yeah, so I was going to say, it was written by Alan Varney, who wrote some other great stuff for Earthdawn. I think the story is fantastic. Again, because it's potentially comical.
Yes.
In contrast to the sort of darkness and horror and struggle and whatnot danger that is Haven and Parlaenth broadly and Earthdawn sort of in general.
Yeah.
I really like the contrast. I really like the idea. I understand why it's not there. But I also recognize that for the most effective ending, you need more than what is presented here. And that's just like my biggest caution to people who might want to run this is understand that the sort of third act, the final resolution, doesn't provide a lot of direct support the way that Dead Man's Hand does.
Yes.
Or Infected, where they show like they go through the different likely options and how you would resolve each of them. It's just kind of like, and then this happens and chaos ensues and good luck. I mean, it's not that facile about it. I will be honest. But that can be how it feels, which could lead to the resolution being a little bit unsatisfying. That's my biggest thing. And as I said, the item itself, the desire box, is something that could very easily be grabbed and a similar scenario thrown into any other location that yes. your group may be at, where you've got sufficient NPCs and familiarity with the group for this to cause similar kinds of problems. Imagine this showing up in Travar.
Yes.
In a neighborhood in Travar, and what could potentially come about as a result of that. I mean, it would be a kind of a different situation. Haven is a much smaller community.
Yeah.
And so it is a lot easier to get everybody swept up in it. But in any kind of community where you've got various groups that potentially in conflict, or people who are certainly desirous of things.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like a really solid premise that just, I think, probably mostly for space concerns. But it also, I think, shows the difference in writing and adventure design styles of the various authors. Like, of the three that we've seen so far,
yeah,
they are three very different adventures, very different mm-hmm. presentations of the adventures. You can see in Dead Man's Hand that, because you compare it to Infected, yeah, this is a Robin Laws adventure because of the structure of it. It feels like this one was more, I'm going to focus a lot on setting up the situation and then let the game master. I understand why you would do that. Why you would say, okay, I'm going to focus all of this on getting it set up, because the resolution, the Act 3 chase
mm-hmm.
has to be personal and will be different for every group that gets involved because of the different NPCs that are going to be there and so many other factors that it is tough to provide a lot more guidance than here's the inciting incident that kicks off our chase scene, for lack of a better term.
Yeah.
And so have fun until your session time is up and then you have the passion show up and that's kind of it.
Yeah.
It's like the parents coming home early when the big rager party is going on.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's all that. I also like this adventure as well, because it does take the expectation of what you think a regular adventure would be and turn it on its ear. And this has no creatures to fight over. So no legend point award for that stuff. This is all, did you go here? Did you talk to this person? Did you do this thing? These are your legend awards. And so it breaks the mold as far as that's concerned.
Yeah, and there's even the possibility that given the location, that the players might think that there's horror magic involved or a curse of some sort, which is kind of true, but the fact that it's passion related is another sort of twist on the expectations, mm-hmm. which is always something I like to see in the published adventures for Earthdawn, because it shows the variety of things that are actually possible with it.
The depth and the breadth. It's not always horror magic. And this is what I think one of the, correct me if I'm
and
wrong.
And it's weird magic. I love weird, whimsical, likely unexplainable magic, because I don't like everything to be super codified and only the things that are described in the books, or I have to fit everything within this
word for word
rigid framework of how things are supposed to go. No.
Yeah, no.
Have weird, wonderful, crazy stuff. I mean, the Southern Catacombs are a huge example of...
yep.
I think it's in there where, like, there's a reference to something in the Southern Catacombs that's very clearly, like, a portal opens and some Shadowrunners flow through and then go through a portal on the other side and aren't seen again.
Yes, something like that.
So, high marks for the concept. Just understand that as a GM, you're probably going to need to do some
heavy lifting.
Advance work. You can't run this cold. You're going to have to do some setup in previous adventures and whatnot. Yeah. And you're going to need to do a little bit of work, or at least thought about what's going to be going on during that sort of final climactic struggle for the box.
Yeah. I ended up with an inter-party fight. I mean, people were absolutely trading blows over this. And so it was like, okay, roll initiative, crap. But that's how it worked in my group. And that it's kind of how it ended up that way. So I don't mind it. I like all of it because it does. So basically, just to summarize really quickly, exactly what you just said, you got to do some prep. You can't run it cold. Don't run this one first. If you can run all four of these at all, run a whole bunch of other ones eventually. And when you want a break from combat and you want a break from fighting creatures and changing expectations is what people are your players are used to, then this is the time to run this one because it will absolutely turn everything they think on their ear and belie their expectations. So yeah, love it. Love it. Love it. Love it.
Yeah. And so ultimately we haven't talked about the last one yet, but of the four in here, I will say that this is the one that probably requires the most work from a GM to make work. Blood Pact is fairly straightforward.
Yeah.
There is enough guidance and structure in Dead Man's Hand to do what you need to do on that without necessarily a lot of advanced prep work and thought on the part of the GM. Yeah. This one requires the most. The last one, which we'll talk about next time to wrap up this series, is more in the vein of Blood Pact in that it is a little bit more traditional Earth Dawn, mostly linear A to B, solving a problem.
Mm-hmm. Correct me if I'm wrong, because you know more about the adventures than I do. I've not run them all. This is the only one I can think of that actually has involvement from one of the passions.
Possible. You might be right on that. I think it's possible that there is some passion involvement at some stage of Blades, but I don't remember all the individual pieces of that well enough to recall off the top of my head.
Fair.
That's the only other one that I can think of where that might be the case, because I know there's none in Shattered Pattern. I know there's not really any in any of the other collections, Thrall Adventures or Skypoint Adventures.
Yeah.
But yeah, this might be the only one that has like an actual real direct appearance and interaction with a passion.
So I just, like I said, that defies expectations as well. And I appreciate that because that's not always go here, kill the monster, get the treasure and come home. So I appreciate that as well. And this is a nice way to highlight that the difference in Earth Dawn Adventures right here. So until next time, folks, go fight over your desire box for your legend.
Good night, everybody.